I'll be right back.
Okay. I slur a bit from the pain meds kicking in. The mattress dips from the loss of his weight. He takes off his pants on his way to the bathroom, and saliva pools in my mouth when I see that bubbled butt. I want to bite it. Grrr. I giggle to myself.
What's so funny?
He asks. Thinking about that booty. I hold out my hands and pretend to grab. He chuckles, but somehow doesn't manage to smile.
You're cute when you're high.
You're cute, I retort. Take that. I lift my nose in the air, proud of my witty comeback. There it is. That once-in-a-lifetime smile. I could die happily right now, knowing it's the last thing I ever see. The hiss of the shower lulls me into a light sleep. I'm in the veil between awake and asleep, and it's the kind of fog that's wildly addicting. There are no thoughts, no fears, no panic. There's nothing, because the only thing that matters is sleep. Nothing else. I don't know how long I lie in the in-between, but the bed dips again and tongue is there. His scent has my eyes opening, and his arm across my waist has me falling into a fog of safety instead. His skin is pink from the hot water, and his wet hair tickles my shoulder as he puts his chin in the crook.
Knock, knock.
Tongue is up and out of bed with a knife in his hand in a matter of 2 seconds. The door opens and Tongue throws the blade through the air, barely missing the man's head. It lands with a hard thump in the wall, and Mercy ducks out of the way.
Oh, it's you.
Tongue sounds less than thrilled. He snags the knife from the wall, and when he turns around, I focus on the sweatpants he is wearing. They are gray, hanging low on his hips, and leave nothing to the imagination.
It's just me,
Mercy says.
I heard what happened to Daphne. Are you okay?
I'm great, I say, scratching the tip of my nose. How are you?
Well, I have a lot to tell you. I want to know what you're doing here.
Tongue interrupts him. He grabs the whetstone for his blade and wastes no time grinding the metal against stone.
Reaper said I could find you here when I knocked on the clubhouse door. I came with those answers after doing some research. I figured you'd want to know, Daphne.
Mercy takes a step forward, then stops. His hand is bandaged from the other day, but he seems to be doing fine.
Well, you could have knocked on our door. I did. You didn't answer, and I got worried,
Mercy says. Why? You don't even know me, I say, lifting my good arm in the air to make a point. I just remind you of my mom. How did you know her?
May I?
Mercy asks Tongue as he eyes the spot at the edge of the mattress to take a seat. Tongue nods.
Any fast movements and I'll kill you. No doubt about that,
Mercy says. The bed dips again, but Mercy weighs less, so the motion isn't so significant.
What do you want to know first?
He asks me. Even through my high goggles, I can tell he hasn't slept. His beard isn't combed, and his hair isn't styled. His eyes are tinged red, like he has been crying. Did you love my mom? I ask. He smiles, as if he is remembering her fondly.
She was my first love. Look.
He digs into his back pocket, pulls out a black wallet, unfolds it, and slides out a square picture.
That's us. She was 18, and I was 20. I was about to go join the Navy, an idea she loved and hated. We had been friends for years, but it was only that summer we realized our friendship was more than that. It was love.
I'm careful with the photograph as I hold it. The edges are worn, the color is faded, but I can still recognize my mom. She has a beaming smile on her face that I had never seen before while growing up. I rub a finger over her face and inhale. She's sitting on a motorcycle, arms wrapped around a much younger Mercy who has dark hair in this picture. He is wearing a leather jacket, and her cheek is pressed against his back like she's holding on to him tight. She has on jeans and a t-shirt. Nothing fancy. I never saw her smile like this. I actually never saw her smile, I say with realization. What happened? Why weren't you two together anymore?
I left for the Navy. I was in special ops, so the mission I was on was so secret she didn't know about it. It was only supposed to be a few weeks, but I got captured. I was a prisoner of war for a few years. I never got to send her a letter explaining it. I bet she thought I died.
But when you came back, why didn't you search for her?
She was with another man. She had a family. I didn't want to ruin that.
You should have! I throw the picture at him. Maybe she'd still be alive if you would have done something.
I didn't know.
He chokes. His hand grips the middle of his shirt, right where his heart is.
God, I didn't know. It's all I have thought about. She was everything. She was fucking everything, Daphne. I swear, she's the reason I lived when I was captured. I'd see her face every time they tortured me, and all I wanted to do was get back home to her. I didn't know.
He swallows, staring down at the black of his boots. You didn't know what? I hiss, angry at him, happy that my mom knew some form of happiness and sad she didn't get more of it like she deserved.
I didn't know when I left for the Navy that she was pregnant.
His eyes meet mine, then land on tongue.
When I saw her with a little girl, my heart broke because we talked about having kids, and the man she was with didn't love her, not the way I did. Not in the amount I did. He couldn't.
He slaps his chest again.
I didn't want to come between a family, but damn it, I regret it now. I regret it so fucking much.
Why? I yell at him through tears, the high gone, but my heart pumping adrenaline.
The other night, when I got home, I did some research. You looked too familiar to me. I brought up your mom's name and your birth certificate, then checked the date you were born.
He blows out a breath and rubs his uninjured palm on his knees.
8 months after the day I left.
Holy moly. I suck in a deep breath. My mouth falls open in shock. I try to say something, anything, but the words don't come out. Mercy continues.
And there, on the original birth certificate, the father's name was blank. She didn't put down your father. She didn't put down anyone, but you don't know how badly I wanted to fill in that blank with Andre Machado.
He reaches for my hand and rubs his thumb across it.
I also go by Mercy.
My mind tunnels, racing at 1,000 miles an hour. The only thing I can focus on is the lie surrounding my life. So my dad isn't even mine.
He raised you, so he is your father, but God, if I could turn back time, Daphne, I would have given anything to watch you grow up. I'm so envious.
I pull my hand away, unable to stop the flow of tears when I think about what could have been different. You saw us, and you turned your back.
Because I didn't want to ruin whatever life your mother built for you. I didn't know you were mine. I swear, Daphne, I had no idea, or I would have.
Please leave. I point toward the door. My mind is swirling, and I hate it when it does this, because usually it means I'm about to break. I don't want to break. Not here. Not now.
Daphne, I want to get to know you. I want to make up for lost time. I want to be the father I never got to be for you. I'll do anything for a chance,
he begs. I need time to think. Please. Go. My voice hitches, and I can't stop the tears. He reaches for my hand again, and I pull it away with a small shake of my head. Don't. He picks up the photo, takes a picture of it with his phone, then hands it to me, sliding it into the palm of my hand.
This should have always been yours.
He bends down and presses a dry kiss to my forehead.
I didn't know I could love someone I didn't know so quickly,
Mercy whispers.
But finding out I have a beautiful, strong daughter makes me realize the love a parent has for a child is instantaneous. I am so sorry.
The leather of his cut rubs together as he straightens. His lashes stick together, wet with the tears he is keeping at bay.
Take care of her,
he tells Tongue, before doing what I want him to do. He turns and leaves. The door shuts softly, and Tongue climbs onto the bed. We don't speak. He doesn't tell me everything is going to be okay, and he doesn't lie to me. He holds me while I cry. He knows that's all he can do because words cannot make me better. I cry thinking about the life I could have had. I sob thinking about how happy my mother could have been, and I wail at the loss of it all. I cry until I fall asleep, while Tongue rubs his hands up and down my back to comfort me. I don't know how long I sleep for, but I wake up to my cell phone vibrating on the nightstand. Tongue is sound asleep. I answer it quickly, keeping my voice soft. Hello? I eye Tongue to make sure I'm not waking him.
Daphne,
comes the voice of my father. Well, the man I have always known as my father, stunning me silent.
You need to come home. Your Aunt Tina is in the hospital and it isn't looking good.
Dad? I ask, to make sure it's who I think it is. Why are you calling me in the middle of the night? I haven't heard from you in months. This can't be him. He doesn't call. Ever.
Get here, now.
Typical. He hangs up before I can ask if she is okay. He's always hated talking on the phone. I just thought he'd want to talk for a minute if he missed me. But regardless, I have to go. My mind numbs and something flips in my brain. I have to go home. I have to go to Nola.
Chapter 15. Something isn't right. The room is different. I sit up with a gasp and let my eyes adjust to the dark room. It's colder, like something sucked the warmth out of it and left me for dead. I reach for my knife and the moonlight glitters across the blade. I listen, focusing on anything that doesn't belong, but I don't hear a thing. And that's the problem. The only breaths I hear are my own. My arm swings out to feel Daphne's side of the bed, but it's cold. I reach for the lamp, knocking over a glass of water onto the floor before I can pull the string connected to the bulb. Click. The light illuminates the room. Daphne. I still sound sleepy, but alarmed at the same time. The silk sheets on her side of the bed are almost unbothered. I bought silk sheets because I wanted her to be comfortable, but maybe she doesn't like them and wanted to sleep somewhere else. I throw my legs over the edge of the mattress and my bare feet hit the hardwood floor. I try not to think of the worst. I try not to think like that, but negative notions are my specialty. Negativity makes the world go round. I flip on the bathroom light and peek my head in the bathroom. Daphne? Comet? You here? I ask into the acoustics of the restroom, but the only reply is the echo of my own voice. My heart is a wrecking ball threatening to crack my sternum. The floor creaks with every step I take toward the bedroom door. My breaths are erratic as I think of the worst. It's fine. She's here. Or she's in the clubhouse. She has to be. She said she didn't want to leave, so she's probably scared, wanting to be with the girls again since they have become good friends. Maybe I should have left her with Sarah to heal in the medical room. I just wanted her to wake up in our new bed so she was comfortable. I remember hearing that silk sheets keep you cool when you're warm and warm when it's cool. I wanted what was best for her, that's all. When I get to the bedroom door, I examine her side of the bed. She's unhooked her IV and fluid is dripping onto the floor from the bag hanging on the hook. Her phone is gone from the edge of the nightstand and her shoes, the blue Converse she loves so much, are missing. They were at the foot of the bed, the tips tucked between the space of the floor and the bed frame. They were right there. I open the door. The hinges don't squeak, like a lot of others at the clubhouse, because they are new. I flip the hallway light on. The floors aren't completed yet, and only a part of the wall is up. Everything else is just bare bones of the house's structure. I stand there and listen for her, her sighs, her yawns, her heartbeat, the way she moves. I know it all. I know what every sound she makes sounds like, but I don't hear anything. This house is empty. I sprint down the hall, my feet scratching against the unfinished floorboards. No doubt I'll have splinters to pull out, but I don't care, and throw the front door open. I don't bother closing it either. I jump down the 8 steps, landing directly on my feet before taking off across the desert to the clubhouse. Behind me, I hear a scurry of claws scratching the sand, and I don't need to turn around to see who it is. It's Happy. I leap over the bushes I can see and step on painful, sharp twigs and rocks along the way. The sting in the back of my eyes is there. I don't have a good feeling. My stomach hurts. My heart hurts. Something is wrong. No, please, no. I'll do anything. I beg to someone, to anyone, to fucking everyone. She has to be there. She wouldn't leave. She wouldn't leave me. I pass the black metal building of King's Garage and head toward the side door that takes me to Reaper's office. I try to open the door, but it's fucking locked. I bang my fists on the door rapidly, one after the other. It isn't a knock. It's a plea to be let in. Happy hits the side of my leg, and I bend over to pick him up. He nuzzles his snout against my neck, and the hug he is giving me means the world. The hallway light comes on through the colorful stained glass window, and the skull staring back at me appears to be on fire. I can't see who is walking toward me, but I don't stop hitting the door, even if it means I have to break it down. The lock clicks, the knob turns, and a very tired, very sleepy Juliet answers.
Tongue, what's wrong? I was just making tea. My throat is killing me from singing three nights in a row. I have to tell Tool I need a break.
She rambles tiredly, not giving me a chance to answer. She opens the door wider.
Gosh, come in. You must be so cold. Where is your key? You know you don't have to knock.
Have you seen Daphne? Is Daphne here? The words are rushed and hurried. I stumble against the wall and one of the pictures falls and breaks, which has a door opening beside us. Tongue? Badge scratches the side of his head, then rubs his eyes and scratches his chest. It's so early, or late, or both, he yawns. What's the deal? I run to my room, which is opposite of the kitchen, and place Happy in his tank so we can be warm. Daphne, is she here? She isn't in bed. She isn't in bed. I need to know she's okay. She wasn't beside me when I woke up. She's gone. When I get to the kitchen, the only light on is above the sink, and Juliet's mug is alone on the tabletop. A black mug with a tea bag dipped inside has steam billowing out of it.
No, Tongue, she isn't here.
Juliet regretfully informs me, and worry frowns her lips.
How long has she been gone?
Are you sure she's gone? Badge asks, checking to see if there is any water left in the kettle sitting on the stove. When he nods to himself, he opens the cabinet next to him and grabs a plain white mug, like the kind they have at diners. He pulls out a chair at the table and steals one of Juliet's bags of tea from the box. Maybe she couldn't sleep. Happens to me all the time. I run my hands through my hair and shake my head. She wouldn't, I try to say. My thoughts are moving too fast. I turn around instead, ignoring them since they are no help, and try the basement. Maybe she was in pain and wanted Doc to give her more medicine. Not caring about how quiet I am, I thud down the steps and flip on the light, but the beds are empty. No, I hold a hand over my heart. Denial sinks its fangs into me, snaking venom through my veins. That sensation in my stomach, the one that's knotted and makes me feel sick, gets worse. She's gone. When I get to the top step, I trip, but Slingshot is there at the door to catch me by the arm so I don't fall backward. He looks exhausted, too. It seems the entire clubhouse is awake now, no thanks to me. Slingshot tugs me forward and shuts the door. His hair is wild. The man always has crazy bedhead. He grips my shoulders and tilts his chin down, lifting his eyes through his lashes. Buddy, I need you to start taking some deep breaths. You're freaking out. We can't get anything done if you're panicking. Deep breaths, he reminds me. He inhales through his nose, lungs expanding, then exhales. I follow his lead. I didn't realize how much I needed to calm down and focus. The short breaths were making me lightheaded. The kitchen chairs grind against the floor as he pulls two out, one for me and one for him. I sit down and tug at strands of my hair. I can't do this. I can't focus. What if she's hurt? I grab the sides of my head and rock back and forth. No one will ever be able to love you. You're a fucking idiot. You're nothing but a tight ass for my cock, Wayne. Nothing more, nothing less, and everyone will know that when they look at you. My uncle's words run through my head. Is that what happened? Did she finally see who I am? A backhand to my face has my cheek flaming and my anger snapping to Slingshot. His steely gaze is on mine and he points a finger at me. Get it the fuck together right now. You're fucking Wayne goddamn Hendricks. You cut people's tongues out of their mouths and feed them to your swamp kitty. What's going on? Reaper questions, and everyone in the room sits up a little bit straighter. Not me, though. He doesn't give a fuck about Daphne. Nothing. I'll handle this on my own, I say as I get up from the chair. No one is taking me seriously, and I'm too tired to fight with them. I'll get more done on my own. Tongue, sit down and tell us what is on your mind. Reaper turns on the faucet and fills the coffee pot. Please. Hey, Tongue, how's Daphne doing? Mercy comes through the hallway next, wearing sweatpants and a t-shirt. I know, you're shocked I'm here, but I couldn't leave. He falls silent, having me connect the dots, which means he hasn't told Reaper the truth. Reaper, let me stay. I fling the chair across the room and haul ass toward him, throwing my arm against his neck. This is your fault. She left because of you. I should kill you. Right here. I'll fucking gut you right where you stand. Where is she? Where is my comet? I roar, smashing my forearm against his windpipe. She left me in the middle of the night, and I have a feeling it has to do with you paying a little visit and saying you were her fucking father. What the fuck? Shit. Holy fucking hell. The world cannot be that small. Reaper grumbles under his breath just as he turns the coffee pot on. You want to know what's wrong with me? I turn to them. She's gone. You know better than to think she'd take a midnight stroll alone. She wouldn't leave me. She wouldn't. I know I sound like I'm convincing myself, and maybe I am, but I'm desperate. She was fine until Mercy came in to talk to her about how he knew her mother. We all know how fragile of a mind Daphne has. God! I let go of his throat and lace my hands behind my head. What if she's in the middle of an episode and she needs me? Episode? What are you talking about? And she has the right to know who her father was. I deserve to know my daughter. She was kept from me for 25 years. I'm allowed to talk to her. Mercy defends himself, looking just as scared as I feel. What's wrong with her? Nothing is wrong with her. She's fucking perfect how she is. The blade in my pocket is burning a hole right through, begging me to grab hold and cut Mercy's tongue out. She has psychosis, Reaper tells him. Her version of reality isn't always real. Badge gives me a glass of water. The condensation on the glass is cold and slick against my fingertips. I take a greedy gulp, but it does nothing to put out the new hellfire in my veins. She saw her mom die and her psychosis formed. I think she saw her mom get murdered. I don't think she killed herself. The dreams Daphne has been having lately are too damn real, and she wakes up gasping for air like she's run a mile. Dreams? Why didn't you tell me this? Reaper asks. I didn't think you'd care, I state, adding a bite to every word. He's hurt. Good. Oh my God, I could have saved them so long ago, Mercy says to himself. He props himself against the counter and sags. It's all my fault. I want to blame him, and right now I will, even if logic tells me it isn't his fault. He didn't know about her past. Well, looks like we are having church. We have a ton to discuss. Reaper checks the time on the clock hanging above the sink. 5 a.m. Hope you boys are rested. The front door slams open and my hopes are lifted when I think it's Daphne, but it's Braveheart. Wait a minute. Hey, guys, he greets, rubbing his hands together to get them warm again. What's with the gloomy faces? His eyes land on me and something resembling confusion crosses his face. You just missed Daphne. She left a few hours ago. Before I can blink, before I can breathe again, I have him face down against the table with a knife against the base of his skull. You let her leave? Why? Why would you let her leave alone? I apply more pressure to the end of the knife, a drop of blood pebbling on his skin. I didn't think anything of it. She's one of her own. I figure she can come and go as she pleases. The last word is a loud shout as I apply even more force against his head. Fuck. I'll go check the cameras. I'll see if I can track the traffic cameras to see where she's going. Badge drains the rest of his tea, then pours a cup of coffee. We will find her, Tongue. We care. She is one of ours. I don't say thank you as he leaves the room to go to his office. I'm too fucking busy debating if I want to kill Braveheart.
Tongue, I'm sorry. I didn't know, okay? I didn't know. I thought maybe she was picking something up for you and wanted to keep it a surprise for your birthday or something.
I stop him from saying anything else and pick his head up, then smack it down on the table again. I don't even know my own birthday. I roar into his ear and lift the knife in the air. My uncle never celebrated my birthday. I can't remember any birthdays before he had custody of me either. I simply don't know. Reaper grabs my arm as I slice it through the air, just before it hits Braveheart in the middle of the head, which would have decapitated him senseless. I fight Reaper, but it's my bad arm and the muscles start to shake. Braveheart takes the split second of my weakness for his advantage and rolls away. You need to calm down, Reaper orders, snagging my other arm and yanking it behind my back. I cry out as the scarred gunshot wound tugs. Painful tingles cascade through my tendons, numbing the tips of my fingers. Let me go, I seethe, using my body weight to launch him to my left. He doesn't expect it, and Reaper's grip loosens enough for me to shrug out of his hold. I reach across the table and snag the knife right before Slingshot tries to beat me to it. I hold my trusty blade out in front of me, slashing it through the air, sweat over my brows and down my eyes, stinging and burning from the salt. I'm frantic. I can't decide who to look at. Everyone is crowding me, just like my uncle did. Bend over, Wayne. My uncle's cruel laughter echoes in my head. No, no, I won't bend over. I won't bend over, I scream at them. Tongue, you're safe here, Reaper says with trepidation, slowly inching his way toward me. You killed your uncle. Use that anger for Daphne. Daphne, where is she? Where's my comet? I swing the knife in front of Mercy's face. It's your fault. It's your fault she left me. She's mine. She isn't yours. She was never yours. You waited to take action. I didn't. We don't know yet, but I swear on my life we will bring your old lady home. Slingshot's words hitch as he speaks, the whites of his eyes turning red. No one will love you like I love you, Wayne. No one will take care of you like I do. Don't you like this? Don't you like when I touch you? Something drips onto my cheek. Tears. A concept I'm still learning. Something I've never done before I met Daphne. She isn't even here, and she makes me exposed. I need her, Reaper. I hit the side of my head with my fist. Like you need Sarah, I need Daphne. She makes me better. I'm better. You don't think I don't notice that? I do. I notice, and I'm sorry I haven't said it before, but I'm proud of you, Tongue. I'm so proud of you. You're a good friend, a good man, and you're smart. You've excelled so much, and I can't wait to see where this new you leads. But also, I'm going to need you to put down the knife. She won't come back. She realized how stupid I am. My uncle was right. He was right. My head sways back and forth. He was right. I place the sharp tip into the middle of my elbow. Tongue, no, he wasn't. He wasn't right. You have proved him wrong time and time again. No, I was weak. I am weak. Daphne saw it just like my uncle did. I dig the knife into my skin and drag it down to my wrist. Blood spreads down my arm and spills onto the floor. I go to cut the other, to release the pain, but there is a sharp pinprick against my neck. I can't let you do that, Tongue. Not on my watch, Doc says, keeping an arm around my neck. I tap his forearm with bloody fingers, but whatever he gave me begins to take over my body. The knife slips from my hand and clatters to the floor. I'm falling limp. The fight leaves my body, and all I can see is Daphne's face. There you go, Doc croons, squatting to the floor as gravity takes hold of me so I don't hit the ground face first. It's okay, we got you. Everything is going to be okay. We need to call Seer, someone says. My vision darkens. Daphne's smile is the light at the end of the dark tunnel I find myself walking down more times than not. I close my eyes as her light fades and time is no longer a bitch I'm subjected to. And then everything is black. I don't know how long I'm out. Honestly, I don't care either. My head swims as I open my eyes. I blink. The room doesn't look familiar. I'm not in my room or the house or in the basement. But I shake that thought aside. I need to get up and find Daphne. Damn. Looks like we're more alike than you think, baby brother. My eyes finally come to focus and I lift my head to look at the room across from mine. Porter is there looking down at me from his standing position, smirking. He gives me a finger wave. Good morning, sunshine. Shove your morning up your ass. Oh, someone is cranky. I'm going to kill him. And then I'm going to find Daphne and fucking kill whoever the fuck put me in the asylum.
Chapter 16. I forgot how hot it can get in New Orleans. My hair is sticking to the back of my neck from the humidity. The sun is hot, and there isn't a breeze to be felt. I wait outside the airport for my dad to pick me up, but I don't see him yet. That's okay. He is always fashionably late. A grumble of bikes passes by slowly, and one of the bikers stares directly into my soul. He has bright blue eyes. For some reason, their leather cuts look familiar. On them is emblazoned the words, "Ruthless Kings, NOLA chapter." I try to think of where I recognize it from, but can't quite put my finger on it. I don't know where I could have seen a ruthless king before. I'm not exactly the biker type, but something about them feels familiar. The burn on my chest sends a stab of pain, like it's trying to remind me of something. I think it was some freak accident. Daddy said when I was on the phone with him that I was on vacation. The trip must not have been very good, because I don't remember a thing. Daddy's rusted green Chevy comes to view through the pickup lane. The muffler is off, and the engine is loud, followed by the smell of gas fumes. The grill is hanging on by a piece of wire, and the passenger side door doesn't open from the outside. Daddy leans over from the driver's side and opens it for me. He has a cigarette hanging in his mouth and a flash of anger in his eyes, but it's gone the moment I notice it. Probably my mind playing tricks on me. Daddy says that happens a lot, which is why he sent me on vacation, to clear my head.
"We need to go see your aunt. Get your ass in the truck and stop wasting my damn day."
He smells of booze again. "I thought you quit drinking." I yank the seatbelt across my chest and buckle up.
"Well, it fucking felt like starting again. Not a problem?"
"No, Daddy," I whisper, a whirlwind of uneasiness settling in my stomach. My head hurts so bad, and when I close my eyes, I see a face that eases the queasiness. He's handsome. Chocolate hair and brown eyes. Tattoos. But I don't know how I know him. But I think I do. No. Maybe I've just seen him somewhere and latched on because I thought he was cute. "What happened to your knuckles?" I question, staring at the broken red skin that looks a few days old.
"None of your business."
He flicks the cigarette ash into the small tray that came with the truck, where a dozen other orange butts are buried. The car is just like I remember it, with burn holes all over the leather seat. An open Big Gulp cup is in one of the cup holders that has chewing tobacco stuck to the sides. A tangle of bat bones is hanging from the rearview mirror. Daddy says it keeps the ghosts away. He grabs the black angled gear shift and pulls it down into drive and presses the gas. He turns the volume up on the radio. Some classic rock station screaming about girls, girls, girls. I know it's code for not wanting to talk. As we pass the bikers who are pulled over on the side of the pickup lane, my eyes lock with the one I saw a few minutes ago. His eyes are the clearest blue I've ever seen. He stares at me until I'm too far away to look at him. Daddy doesn't stop like he should when he turns onto the road to see if traffic is clear. Car horns blare and the tires screech along the road as he straightens the wheel. The Mississippi River is to the right, and today it is murky and the water is high. The heat waves are rippling through the air, and I roll down the window to get some sort of breeze, since the air conditioning doesn't work.
"So, you go away for a few months and come back fat? What the fuck happened to you?"
I glance down at my body and frown. I don't think I look that different.
"This is why you always need to be with me. Plus, your aunt came to see me and started bitching at me about your mother's will. I need you here to help fight her with me. Me and you, the widow and the daughter. She won't stand a chance."
I don't like how that sounds. The familiar rumble is distant, and when I glance in the side mirror, I see the motorcycles a few cars behind us. I wait for the fear, but there isn't any there. I'm relieved. Why? The side of my head is hurting again, and the trees warp as the river's waves get abnormally large. I shut my eyes and take a deep breath. I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me.
"Comet."
A deep voice penetrates my inner thoughts, and I smile when I hear his voice. Who is it?
"I swear to God, if you aren't worth it..."
Daddy mumbles under his breath as he tightens his hand on the wheel. I lean my forehead against the frame of the truck, letting hot air rush across my face. I'm trying to piece together where I've been or what I've done, but there's a wall in my head that I can't break down. Something is stopping me from thinking clearly. What does Daddy do to make me like this?
Get the fuck out. I'm going to go find a parking spot.
I open my eyes to see that we are in front of the hospital already. The bushes on either side of the automatic doors are bright green, and an alligator sticker on the side of the bench has my heart kicking up a notch. But why?
Hurry the fuck up, you idiot! Christ, no good, just like you're...
I don't hear what he has to say because I slam the door, not wanting to hear the hatred he spews. I don't know how I've managed to live with him all these years. Something tells me I haven't, but I don't understand. I'm more confused than ever. I head inside the hospital, and the burst of air conditioning drapes over my sweaty skin. I sigh in relief. Damn, that feels good. I pass a few people holding their stomach. One is puking in a barf bag, and the other looks like he is thinking about puking. It's a cruel, sick cycle. Literally. The nurse at the front desk is older, with dyed brown hair to cover the grays, and her lips are thin and wrinkled. She purses them as she talks on the phone. When she notices me through spider-leg lashes, she holds the phone to her shoulder.
Sorry, sweetie. The man is just going on and on about how someone messed up his stitches. How can I help you?
Her southern accent takes away the edge gnawing at my stomach. I'm looking for my aunt. Her name is Tina Douglas. She's a patient here. She types away on the keyboard, and the jolly expression she had on her face is gone.
She's in intensive care, she says, sadly. It's in the east wing. Just follow this hallway and look for one of the doctors there to update you on her condition.
Intensive? Oh my God, what happened? Aunt Tina is the closest person I have to a mother. She has to be okay.
We don't know. She was found beaten up pretty good. Sorry, sweetie. I'll keep her in my prayers.
She touches the golden cross she has around her neck, as if what she says is supposed to bring me comfort. I give her the best smile I can manage, which is barely there, with a tiny lift of my lips. I head down the hall like she says, and follow the signs that lead me to intensive care. The floors wobble, and I pause, holding out my hands to steady myself. It looks like lava. No one else seems to be concerned. I get a few odd looks from doctors passing me by. It's fine. I'm fine. Everything is fine. Act natural. Your mind is playing tricks on you. I step through the lava and wait for the undeniable pain, but nothing happens. When I don't feel the expected agony, the floor turns to normal again, and I let out a deep breath. See? I'm fine. I get to the double doors with the words intensive care painted in red across them and step through. Now, I have no idea where to go. Everyone is so busy. The doctors are rushing back and forth, and the nurses are helping the patients. I stand there, not knowing what to do, when an arm grabs mine and pulls me back out the doors. I'm shoved in a closet, and a hand is over my mouth. Blue eyes.
Do not scream,
he whispers. His Cajun accent is light, making him easy to understand.
My name is Seer. That name mean anything to you?
I shake my head.
I'm going to lift my hand from your mouth, and you need to promise me you aren't going to scream. I'm not here to hurt you, Cher. I'm here to help.
As fast as I can, I nod.
Okay. That's real good, Cher. Real good.
He eases his hand off me and keeps it hovered just in case he has to silence me again. You're from the airport?
I am. A friend of mine asked if I could find you. Luckily, they have a guy that's good at locating people. You, mon ami, were a good girl using a credit card.
What are you talking about?
Daphne, you don't belong here. Don't you feel that? You are meant to be somewhere else. Men from the Ruthless King's Las Vegas chapter are coming for you. Do you know them?
I shake my head, but it does sound familiar. And it feels like I do.
Oh, Sherry, you bet you do.
he replies with a smile. His hand is back over my mouth when a doctor stops outside of the door to talk to a co-worker.
I don't know how she's going to make it.
Me either. She received one hell of a beating. Whoever did this is a monster. I wonder if they are talking about my Aunt Tina.
You cannot trust your dad,
Seer tells me, his blue eyes oddly bright as he stares at me.
I think you know that. Here,
he points a finger to my heart.
And here,
he taps my head.
The human instinct is some of the most powerful forces out there, mon ami. You just need to listen to you.
What's happening to me?
Your mind is lost, Daphne. But don't worry, it's going to be found. Keep an open mind, and your aunt's abuser is closer to you than you think.
Riddles? I'm not good at riddles.
I'll be keeping an eye on you while you're here.
Why?
Mostly to keep my head on my body,
he chuckles.
That tongue is no man to mess with, especially when it comes to you.
How do you know this?
Oh, Cher, that's a story for another time, I'm afraid. Just keep yourself alive, okay? I know you think you don't remember right now, but that is not true. You remember everything.
I remember nothing, I hiss, unable to stop the pool of tears blurring my vision. I know nothing. His hand lands on my shoulder, and he brings his lips to my ear, whispering,
"Your dreams remember everything."
I close my eyes when his warm breath becomes too close. But my dreams... I snap my eyes open to find myself alone in the closet. He was here, I say to myself. I'm not crazy. He was right here. I find myself staring at the corner, the darkest part of the room, and wait. Wait for what? I don't know. Something about the shadows calls me home. I just wish I knew where home was.
Chapter 17. I'm fucking furious. You think you're going to do what? I snarl at Reaper as he speaks to me from the other side of the glass. I bang my fist against it. You aren't going anywhere without me. Tongue, you're injured, and I think a few days here might help. We know where she is. Badge saw she bought a plane ticket to New Orleans. I've already called Pocus. They found her. Seer has already talked to her. Bullseye and Reaper share a look. I hate that look. It tells me they know something else and they don't want me to know. What else? Reaper rubs a hand over his day-old scruff and fogs up the glass as he sighs. I pound my fist against the glass again, right where Bullseye's face is. I want to punch it. Tell me. She doesn't remember anything, Tongue. She's in one of her episodes. Remember? Remember what? I ask, stupidly. By the expressions on their faces, it hits me like an anvil. I stumble backward from the hard hit of the weight. Wayne? Hey, Wayne! Porter calls out to me somewhere in the distance. She can't remember me? She doesn't remember us? No, she doesn't, Reaper says sadly. She said she'd never forget, and now, what am I going to do? My chest heaves as sorrow fuels me. We are going to go down to meet the NOLA chapter. We will be back, and she will come with us. You are going to let me go, I say to him. I need to see her. I need to remind her of us. She remembers. Maybe not right now, but she will. She'll see me in her dreams. She has to. I have to hold on to that. I have to. I gulp. I have to believe in that. I have to believe that our love is stronger than a memory. It's a comet that stands the test of time and burns forever. Tongue? I charge to the glass window and slam my head against it. Blood drips from the crack, spidering outward. I don't even bother to wipe my face. If you don't, I swear I will break this wall down and find her my fucking self. Mercy? Bullseye? She needs me. A howl rips from the top of my lungs. She doesn't have a damn thing to do with Mercy. Her memories run deep with me. Me. She's mine, Reaper. If this were Sarah, you would stop at nothing to save her. This is my old lady. Don't take this from me. The last words make his face soften. Okay, he says. Can I come? Or is that asking too much? Porter asks as he taps the glass. It's too much to ask. I don't trust you. I don't trust you either. You're staying. You're lucky I don't kill you where you stand. You are only alive for Tongue. That's it. Zane, he calls for his uncle. Don't yell. I'm right here. Damn. Zane huffs as he comes out of the room diagonal from me. I heard everything. He takes out the set of keys and slides one into the lock. They only put you in here because they were afraid you'd hurt yourself. I already hurt myself, I say, slipping out the door when he opens it and grab the bag of my stuff they packed and left by the door days ago. Let's go. I don't want to waste any more time. Who knows what her father is doing to her? Who is coming? I ask. No one besides us. Poodle has Ellie's ballet recital to go to. Joey is sick, so Skirt is staying. Doc doesn't want to leave Joanna. Tool has his first college night at King's Club. Patrick, I get it. It's fine. Let's go, I say. She isn't going to remember on her own. I'm so impatient. I want to get there already. Is she okay? Is she hurt? Is she happier without me? Reaper, Zane, and Bullseye walk away and head down the steps. Hey, baby brother. I look at Porter over my shoulder, wishing things could be different between us. I wish there was a possibility we could be brothers, but there isn't, and there never will be. What? Be careful. Why do you care? He lifts a shoulder and strokes the spine of the book he is reading. I don't know. I just know I do. Just don't go getting yourself killed. I give him a slight chin tilt. You too, I say languidly. I'm unsure about this new development, but it's hard to ignore that we share the same mom. It's hard to ignore he killed her too, but also the hardest to ignore is the fact my mom didn't love me at all. Porter is sick. Thinking trying to kill me was in some way saving me. Sickness must run in the family because I know I'm not right in the head either. How we get past this, I don't know. It's too much to think about right now. I run down the steps, needing to get away from him and remind myself he is the groundskeeper, a man that wanted to kill me and the only family I've known. I can't forgive that. I'm not that good of a man. Hell, I'm not a good man at all. I stop in the bathroom to change and pull on my cut before I fly out the front door and see Reaper and Bullseye waiting near the truck. Do not make me regret this, Reaper warns. Keep your head when we are down there. I don't make promises I can't keep. I tell him in earnest and hop in the back seat, then shut the door. I was afraid you'd say that. Reaper and Bullseye buckle their seatbelts at the same time. Let's get this trip over with and bring home Daphne. Can we bring Tool, please? Bullseye starts to laugh. It's been too long since I've seen him freak out over Seer. No, I need him here. Too many of our women are pregnant and need protection. I'm not leaving them alone when I have two of my best killers in the truck right now. Reaper turns the engine of the Ford Raptor and its horses shake the truck. He stretches his arm across the back of the passenger seat and turns around. Tongue, we need to have a serious talk before we go. Can it wait? I need to get to Daphne. I know, but this needs to be said. He turns his body and the movement has his jeans rubbing against the leather. I know things have been tense between us. I've been tiptoeing around you and I'm sorry. I stare out the window and stare at the cactus growing from the ground. I'm uncomfortable. The only heart-to-heart I want to have is with Daphne. What happened to you? I should have talked to you about it instead of walking on eggshells. It was wrong of me to invade your privacy. I exposed you. That was wrong of me, and it was my failure as president. I apologize. I feel exposed now. I rub my chest. The anxiety is almost physical in the way it applies pressure. I didn't enjoy burning Daphne, but I was fucking proud of her for doing that for you. I want her for you, Tongue. She's strong, and I am proud of you. I've never heard someone besides Daphne tell me they are proud of me. It's a strange feeling. I almost like it. I know you've been having a hard time lately trusting us, and I get it. I would too in your position. But I want you to know you always have a place here with us. No matter what, your family, Tung. He stares at me, and I can tell he really means it. Can we go now? This is too uncomfortable. I want to cut the tongue out of her father's throat. She's mine. Yeah, Tung, we can go. The truck reverses out of the dirty driveway. We're flying there. Great. I hate flying, but it makes sense. The quicker, the better. Country music blares on the radio, but I don't know the song. We stay quiet, and my mind drifts to Daphne. It hurts so fucking bad to know she can't remember me, but I'll fix this. She needs me. She has a lot to process right now. She just found out her dad isn't her dad. It makes sense that her psychosis would break free. I want her to be okay. That's all. If she's safe and sound, I can take care of the rest. I'll always take care of her. After I carve my name in her skin so she fucking knows she belongs to me. She can't forget me when she has to look at my name every day. Just the thought has my cock growing hard. Damn it, I miss her. I take out my journal from my back pocket and open it, seeing the drawing of her naked I did the other night. Perfect fucking tits. When I get back, I'm going to have her push them together so I can fuck them. Then I'm going to come all over her mouth and watch her lick her lips clean. Stop growling back there. Bullseye polishes his silver dart. Have you checked your sugar levels today? I rub my finger over the soft curve of her face against the paper. Touché, he replies. I hold a smile inside and flip the page of the journal. I reach into my cut pocket and pull out a pencil, sketching her face from memory. Her small button nose, plump lips, and big eyes. I love that her bottom lip is a little bit bigger than the other. I growl again when I think about them wrapped around me and sucking me dry. Reaper chuckles from the front seat. I don't care who knows how much I want Daphne. If it were up to me, I'd let the entire world know. I concentrate on the wispy strands of her hair, making sure they are just right. They have to be perfect. Every single strand on her head is perfection. The way they curl around her chin as they hang loose from the messy bun she has on top of her head, or the way they blow in the wind as she's holding on to me tight as we ride the bike, or how she swings it through the air with a flip while she fucks me. I growl again. Bullseye and Reaper laugh. It isn't funny. All right. Empty your pockets. No weapons and shit on the plane. I need my knife, Reaper. You know I need it. I can't be anywhere without it. I need it to protect Daphne. They will have knives there, Tung. He pinches the bridge of his nose, exasperated. Fine. I won't be happy about it. You never are, Tung. I mock him while I slide my knife into the pocket of the front seat, then open the back door and hop out. The three of us head toward the departing flights in the same stride, and I tuck my sketchbook safely in my pocket. When we get to the front counter, the woman eyes us warily. 3 one-way tickets to New Orleans, please. Reaper leans against the counter and gives his charming smile to the lady. She's older, blonde hair turning white, but her blue eyes are clear as she was when she was younger. As light as the sky. Not as pretty as Daphne. No one ever is or ever will be.
My pastor on Sunday said I was going to be faced with darkness and evil this week, and look what the devil dragged in,
she says, pretending to be unimpressed, but her wrinkled cheeks turn a brighter shade of red than the blush she's wearing today. I think you're getting us confused with our buddy Knives, Bullseye chimes in, taking a jab at his 666 tattoo above his dick.
There are more of you? She gasps.
Oh, we are everywhere, ma'am, Reaper says, his eyes dropping to her name tag. Gretchen, whenever you need help, you find us, okay?
He grabs her hand and kisses her wrinkled, age-spotted knuckles. Oh, Pastor Dan was right. I'd be blinded by Satan in a Sunday hat, and you three are all wearing hats.
She giggles. I'm not wearing a hat, I say, impatient. Can we fucking go now? It's a saying. You know what? Never mind, Bullseye says. I don't get it. We aren't wearing hats. Gretchen, the poor wench, hands over the tickets with shaky hands.
Satan? She points to Reaper, then to his head. Hat. A big one.
Oh, it's big, all right,
Reaper winks. I'm telling Sarah, Bullseye snorts, holding in a laugh. I snatch the tickets from her frail hands, annoyed with this fucking bullshit. I want to get on that plane, and I'm going to go with or without them. Sarah would understand. I saved us $200, and we have a kid on the way. Reaper defends himself as we slither through the busy crowd. Slot machines go off in the distance. Even people at the airport are drunk and wasting all their money. I see an Elvis in the corner, and I want her home so bad so he can marry us. I'm determined. Shoes off, phones in the bin, empty out your pockets, please, the agent shouts over the roar of people. I don't want anyone to see my sketchbook. What if they look through it? Daphne is mine, no one else can see. Bullseye places his boots in the gray plastic bin and empties his pockets. He heads into the scanner and lifts his arms. I don't like this machine, it's small. Sir, please step over here. She ushers him to the side of the machine, and she takes a wand and roams it over his body until she reaches his zipper. Sir, do you have anything in your pockets? No, ma'am, he smirks. She waves the wand again, and it beeps 3 times. What's in your pants, sir? A Prince Albert, a Guiche, and Jacob's Ladder. You want to climb it and see how high you get, gorgeous? Bullseye offers with a salacious baritone. Next, she shouts, lifting a brow and unimpressed with Bullseye. I have a taser, sweetie. Get to moving. Wound my heart, lady. Get a Band-Aid, she sasses, and Bullseye grabs his boots from the belt. Finally, all of us are through the security and get to the gate. Bullseye is pouting, Reaper is getting grouchy, and I'm getting angrier. This is taking too long. The longer it takes, the longer Daphne goes without remembering us. The lady behind the desk smiles, her brunette hair pulled back into a perfect bun, and she grabs the microphone and announces, Now boarding flight 1289 to New Orleans, Louisiana.
First thing we do when we get there is go see Pocus. Not a chance in hell. I'm going to go see Daphne, I say to Reaper. Not without us. Yes, I am. I am not going to do anything. I just want to see her, that's it. Like I used to. I've missed watching her. It's how we started. And maybe that's what she needs a reminder of. This jet is going to fall to the damn ground.